like to thank Mo and Wally for another opportunity to bring a lesson here tonight. Mo told me it's an opportunity for growth, and that's something I certainly need and welcome in my Christian faith. Tonight I want to focus on God's view versus our own view. And with that, I'd like to start out with focus on Mark chapter 9, 14 through 29. When they came to the other disciples, they saw a large crowd around them, and the teachers of the law arguing with them. As soon as all the people saw Jesus, they were overwhelmed with wonder and ran to greet him. "What are you arguing with them about?" he asked. A man in the crowd answered, "Teacher, I brought you my son, who is possessed by a spirit that has robbed him of speech. Whenever it seizes him, it throws him into the ground. He foams at the mouth, gnashes at the teeth, and becomes rigid. I asked your disciples to drive out the spirit, but they could not." "You unbelieving generation," Jesus replied, "how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy to me." So they brought him. When the spirit saw Jesus, it immediately threw the boy into a convulsion. He fell to the ground and rolled around, foaming at the mouth. Jesus asked the boy's father, "How long has he been like this?" "From childhood," he answered. "It has often thrown him into the fire or water to kill him. But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us." "If you can," said Jesus. "Everything is possible for the one who believes." Immediately the boy's father exclaimed, "I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief." When Jesus saw that a crowd was running to the scene, he rebuked the impure spirit. "You deaf and mute spirit," he said, "I command you, come out of him and never enter him again." The spirit shrieked, convulsed him violently, and came out. The boy looked so much like a corpse that many said, "He's dead." But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him to his feet, and he stood up. After Jesus had gone indoors, his disciples asked him privately, "Why couldn't we drive it out?" He replied, "This kind can come out only by prayer." This is one of my favorite stories in the Bible. And I just think it's a touching story because it involves parents' love for their child. And when I put myself in that person's, you know, that father's shoes, you know, when his son's life is on the line, you know, and I would say the same thing. You know, I do believe, but help me overcome my unbelief. Because I think at times we always have doubts in our lives. And even him, you know, I'm sure at that time, he was seeing Jesus create these miracles. I mean, I'm sure that's the reason why he brought his son there or heard about the miracles that he was doing. But yet he had doubt, even though either he saw it or heard it firsthand. And for us today, we only have the Bible, the written word. And from that, we choose to either believe or not believe. So belief and unbelief can coexist. And I appreciate that story in the Bible, you know, showing me that. But it also shows our limitations and God's power. some of you guys know, most of you know, that I work for the Coast Guard. And my job, I work for the Maritime Safety Security Team in downtown Boston. They're also called MSSTs. And the MSSTs were created after 9/11. There's 12 of them currently around the United States. And we're a deployable boat force that is utilized to augment port security in a short period of time in the U.S. We have 6 deployable RVS boats, which are manned with 4 and aft M240s. We also have our own Maritime Force Protection Team, which is kind of like the Coast Guard's SWAT team. They're trained in vertical insertion, which is down there at the left, and several other special capabilities, close quarter combat, radiation detection, some other specialties. Well, for my job, I'm the planning officer for the unit. So in order for when the unit gets a mission, I have to forward deploy, take care of the logistics, see where they're going to, you know, moor up their boats, what armory we're going to utilize, how we're going to get the boats in the water, where we're going to park the trailers. Then I also have to look at the intel, meet with, you know, the sectors we're going to be working for, what our mission is, and then I come back and relay that to the crew. And one of the tools I really have come accustomed to in my trade is Google Maps and the aerial view. Because doing the aerial view, this is the aerial view of the base in downtown Boston, I can see, okay, well, I mean, for us to get from point A to point B, you know, you have a convoy of 6 trailers and boats and, you know, vans and everything else. Well, maybe that route isn't the best thing, that route to take, you know, or maybe that parking lot just isn't going to work. And it helps me to look ahead for potential problems before I even get there. And I also appreciate it because it has a street view. So when you're in Google Maps in the aerial view, and then you could zoom in and you could see what it looks like from the street. And this is what Coast Guard Base Boston looks like right there in the entrance. And it gives me a much better picture of, you know, if I'm going to a unit or, you know, some other particular place, whether it be a hotel or something else, that it's a useful tool to be able to see it firsthand before I get there. So I could tell whether this is going to work or it's not going to work even before I get there. But one of the things that I thought about is that God has the aerial view of our lives all the time. And for us, we only operate via the street view. And God can see down the road, you know, if something's going to work out or if it's not going to work out. Or, you know, if it's a path that we shouldn't take or we should be doing something differently. But we're only limited to what we can see. And oftentimes, I can find myself, you know, a little bit upset or if things aren't going my way, only by looking at the street view. And a couple of examples of that is this year I was up for transfer, and many people were asking, you know, where you're going to be going or what's going to be going on, and me and Derek have had several conversations about it. And you know, being in the military, we can appreciate that we're at the mercy of the detailers, and you know, you just I just didn't know. But I had my dream pick, you know, the jobs that you put down where you want to go. And the job where I wanted to go was to the academy. You know, I wanted to be a leadership management instructor at the academy, and that was my number one choice. Because it interested me. You know, I felt that I could be an influence and impact a lot of people's lives, directing them at the mid-level management position, and I was excited about it. And when the detailer called me up, and he said, "No, you're not going there. You got an extension here for another year." And I was a little upset about that. And there was a couple reasons. I was grateful that Holly and I would be able to stay here for another year with everyone and not have to move. But two reasons why I was really upset about it is, one, I got to go through this all again in December. This uncertainty of, you know, where we're going to be going. Because I only got a one-year extension. And two, my unit is scheduled for a six-month deployment this year. And I didn't want to be away from Holly, you know, for that period of time. And I knew the one-year extension probably may not be leaving for most of the year as well. And I was livid when I got those orders. I was livid. I had a couple of sleepless nights, you know, just not happy about it. I called the detailer and, you know, asked him, "Well, who got the job? You know, why would someone get?" You know, just trying to figure out, you know, how come I didn't get the job? I just had to deal with it. You know, I said, "Hey, I don't know. That's the way it is." But later on, a few months later, I find out that my XO wants me to stay here. That I'm not going to be deploying for the 7 months, and he wanted me to work with operations in the home port, which was a great relief to me. And then we also recently found out that Holly's pregnant again, and you know, a move this year would have been pretty hard. It would have been difficult. So looking back, you know, I could see that I was only seeing my view. You know, I was really upset at my view, from my perspective, that all I could see. But when I look back and see, you know, God's view and God's perspective, it's like, wow, you know, things really worked out better than I could have imagined. Another example with Holly, when we first moved here back in 2008, we were in debt back then. Thankfully, we're not now, but back then we were going through some hard times. And Holly got a job at Bally's to help us pay off the debt a little bit faster. And the first 2 weeks she was working there, she came down with a terrible cold. It was horrible. And she had to call in sick twice. And I remember talking to her, I was like, oh boy, I don't know if I were a manager and someone called and sick twice the first week, I don't know if I'd keep them. You know, it's just, she didn't, you know, think much about it. And sure enough, a couple weeks later, she called me and she was very upset. And they fired her, you know. And as a result, you know, I told her she had a gym membership with Bally's as well. And I said, "Well, cancel that. We don't need to go there anymore." You know, and so she did. She canceled that, and then she got a membership at another gym up in Nashua that has daycare for Alora. You know, and you know, super cheap, and they always have three people on staff, and it's just really nice. You know, and it couldn't have been a better deal for us. And then she found a job at Weight Watchers, which she likes, and she really enjoys that. But looking back, you know, at the time of the upset, when things weren't going the way we wanted them, we only saw the street view. And But then, you know, fast forward a few months, 6 months, you look back and it's like, wow, things couldn't have worked out any better if I would have planned them. So what contributes to unbelief? Hardships. Death, illness, poverty, abuse, crime, addiction, unemployment, violence, sadness, pain, fear, depression, anxiety, degradation, helplessness, sorrow. Any one of these, when you're in the midst of the storm, when you're going through trials and suffering, can really make you question, you know, God, are you paying attention? Are you looking at what I'm going through down here? And I know because I've said it. But one thing I've come to learn is that there's three answers to prayer. Yes, no, and not right now. I don't know about most people, but I don't like to hear no. I don't like it. I can handle not right now, but you know, when I hear no, I get upset when things aren't going my way. This is Job chapter 3, verse 1 through 11. After this, Job opened his mouth and cursed the day of his birth. He said, "May the day of my birth perish." And the night that said, "A boy is conceived." That day, may it turn to darkness. May God above not care about me. May no light shine on it. May gloom and utter darkness claim it once more. May a cloud settle over it. May blackness overwhelm it. That night, may thick darkness seize it. May it not be included among the days of the year, nor be entered in any of the months. May that night be barren. May no shout of joy be heard in it. May those who curse the days curse that day. Those who are ready to rouse Leviathan. May its morning stars become dark. May it wait for daylight in vain and not see the first rays of dawn. For it did not shut the doors of the womb on me to hide trouble from my eyes. Why did I not perish at birth and die as I came from the womb? Job went through some hard times. I couldn't withstand a quarter of what Job went through. I couldn't. I know I couldn't. At least I don't think I could. But knowing me, I'd be freaked out. Losing my family, everything you have, and then coming down with terrible disease that, you know, is hideous to the eyes. I couldn't imagine going through some of that. And Job's view was, I want to die. I can't live through this. I mean, he was fed up, and he just cursed the day of his birth. God's view, this is 42:10-17. Job 42:10-17. After Job had prayed for his friends, the Lord restored his fortunes and gave him twice as much as he had before. All his brothers and sisters and everyone who had known him before came and ate with him in the house. They comforted and consoled him over all the trouble the Lord had brought on him. And each one gave him a piece of silver and a gold ring. The Lord blessed the latter part of Job's life more than the former part. He had 14,000 sheep, 6,000 camels, 1,000 yoke of oxen, and 1,000 donkeys. and he also had 7 sons and 3 daughters. The first daughter he named Jeremiah, the second Kiza, and the third Karen Hepuch. Nowhere in the land were there found women as beautiful as Job's daughters, and their father granted them an inheritance along with the brothers. After this, Job lived 140 years. He saw his children and their children to the fourth generation. And so Job died, an old man full of years. God never explained to Job why he had to go through what he went through. But he was still expected to persevere. And he did. He suffered a lot. But, you know, he still just, even though he had his doubts and even though he wished, you know, at one point for his own death, he still hung on. And later, as it said, his life was blessed even more than the first part of his life. This is Genesis 37:28. So when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt. I couldn't imagine the betrayal that someone would feel from a family member selling you into slavery. I mean, yeah, I find out someone, you know, said something about me behind my back without confronting me. That would offend me. You know, I'd be appalled by that. And why'd you say that without coming to me in tongue? But imagine if someone, you know, you knew that your loved ones deliberately planned out getting rid of you, you know, and hoping that you would die. You know, I mean, there's no other real outcome selling them into slavery other than either one, the worst life that you can imagine, or that he was going to die. And I can imagine being Joseph. Ah! I mean, the betrayal and the resentment and the anger that I could just imagine that he would feel. And despair. Just utter despair. Then when you look at God's view, Genesis 41:39. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all of my people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you." And as we know, his fathers and brothers later came to Joseph and had to bow down when there was the famine, seeking food. How could he have known that? You know, when he was sold, you know, into slavery and betrayed by his brothers, you know, but what a low point in his life. But then later on, you know, as he hung on, God changed his circumstances. In Luke 11:9-13, "So I say to you, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, the one who seeks finds, and to the one who knocks, the door will be opened. Which of you fathers, if your son asks for a fish, will give him a snake instead? Or if he asks for an egg, will give him a scorpion? If you then, though you are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give the Holy Spirit to those who ask him?" When I look back at God's handiwork, and I look back at the prayers I prayed when I was going through difficult times in my life, you know, I can't think of a situation in my life. I went through a lot of hard times, too, that didn't work out. And when I put things into perspective, sometimes I'll ask myself, you know, when I'm struggling with something, you know, at work, or I'm dealing with a lot of stress, and I'll ask myself, you know, what was your biggest problem last week? What was your biggest problem last month or last year? Often I can't really remember. I can't think of what really I was struggling with. But it always works out. I mean, I know that things have always worked out better than I could have managed them. And in Romans 31:32, what then shall we say in response to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us? He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things? This is how I act when God says no. And many times it's more of an internal temper tantrum. You know, I don't make a habit of acting like this too much in public. But but God saying no is often the best thing for me. Often it has been the best thing for me. I can remember 10 years ago when I hit my bottom with alcohol. And that was a really difficult time. That was difficult. And really, I mean, I didn't really have that much of an impact on my job. I mean, as I was going through all those difficulties and stuff, I still went to work and maintained everything pretty much as normal. But emotionally, mentally, I was suffering and struggling a lot. And I can remember one day I was on the computer and just, you know, looking around on some inspirational site. It had a lot of prayers and devotionals and things like that. And I came across a poem that kind of helped me put things into perspective from where I was at that time in my life. And the poem was titled, "And God Said No." I asked God to take away my pride, and God said no. He says, not for him to take away, but for me to give up. I asked God to make my handicapped child whole, God said no. He said, her spirit is whole, her body is only temporary. I asked God to grant me patience, God said no. He said that patience is a byproduct of tribulation. It isn't granted, it's earned. I asked God to give me happiness. God said no. He said he gives blessings. Happiness is up to me. I asked God to spare me pain, and God said no. He said suffering draws you apart from worldly cares and brings you closer to me. I asked God to make my spirit grow. God said no. Said I must grow on my own, but he will prune me and make me fruitful. I asked God if he loved me, and God said yes. He gave his only son who died for me, and I will be in heaven someday, because I believe. I ask God to help me love others as much as He loves me. And God said, finally, you have the idea. I have a dog, Norwegian Elkhound, named the Cutter, after the Coast Guard cutters, because we call our ships Cutter. And back then, Cutter was all I had. And we would, every time I would get home from work, I would, you know, take Cutter for a walk, and I'd repeat that poem. And, man, it really helped. It really helped where I was at. Because all I was seeing, all I was hearing in my life was no. You know, no. And it was difficult, you know, but man, it was also such a beautiful time of my life. Such a period of growth. A period of recreating who I was and who I would be. And it was a blessing. You know, but it helped me understand, you know, that God hasn't left me. He's, you know, He's just telling me no right now. That's it. You know, you got to change. You got to do things differently. So I can tell you that God definitely listens to our prayers. Because He's listening to mine. As I said, you know, when I look back at my life, there's just, I couldn't have planned things. I couldn't have put the right people in my life. I couldn't have orchestrated events if it would have been up to me. If it would have been up to me to, okay, you have all the power to do whatever you want to do. Now go ahead and plan it. It wouldn't have turned out as well. So I just ask you if you're struggling, or if you're going through a hard time, consider God's view. And try, even though you might be seeing your view, but just realize that God's view, things aren't always going to be the way they are in the time of your struggle. They always get better. And with that, I'd like to thank Mo and Wally again for an opportunity to share the lesson. You know, I went through this a couple of times and I didn't get as emotional you know, as I did. But I don't know, it's something different when you're in front of a lot of people. But I am blessed. I am very blessed in my life. And I'm so grateful for all the struggles that I've gone through. And I can't say that I enjoy difficult times, because I don't, and I don't always behave or act with grace during those times. But in the back of my mind, just through experience, through having seen God's handiwork and knowing the results, I always know that things are going to work out. So if you're here tonight and I just ask you to consider God's view, vice your view, and if you need our prayers, or if you're not a Christian and you'd like to be baptized, the water's here always available as we stand and sing our song.